Yes, it is all about the children, even after they're born. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. So, you know, the thing is, as parents, I think we all want what's the very best for our kids. And what's interesting to me is we've been sold, and I'd argue that we've actually bought into the concept that choice is going to bring us better, whatever, you name it, better widgets, whatnots, whatever, healthcare, education. But the question is, what if you don't really have a choice? What if what they're giving you are false choices or really no choice at all? And I see this with the charter school movement. I have all of my school choice friends who love to say, well, I should have the choice to send my children wherever. And I'm like, well, what if you can't get in? Or what if they throw you out? You don't have a right. And, you know, I go back to what we talked about last week in the Philadelphia Archdiocese, the Catholic schools there, who right in their first pledge statement, Catholic education is not a right, it is a privilege. What if we're turning education into a privilege and not a right? And this is what takes me to New York City, one of the big charter schools there, this Success Academy charter schools, a big chain of schools that are supposedly the ones on the top of the mountain, the ones on the top of the hill. Well, what if your kid got in and then, well, not so much, which is why we've asked Karen Sproul. She is a New York City parent. Her child was enrolled in the Success Academy charter school. And I thought it'd be interesting to get her story. Karen, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. How are you today?
Good. We as parents, Karen, we want what's best for our kids, right?
Absolutely. Everybody wants the same thing. And that's why, you know, when I go to some of these meetings and I see how the charter companies will spend thousands of dollars of mandating their parents and children to get on these buses to come to these meetings to try to convince people that this is what everybody wants. And what happens is they're actually fighting and being pitted against each other. And what I always say to them is that we all want the same thing. We all want a good education for our child.
Yep.
No one wants anything different. And everyone wants the best for their children.
And I would highlight, when they put those people on buses and spend thousands of dollars, those are tax dollars.
Absolutely.
So those are dollars that should be in the classroom that they're not using in the classroom, that they're using to really, and you know, every time I hear one of the ads on the radio or I see a billboard at a baseball game or on the side of the road, I'm thinking, you know, there are books that are not getting into classrooms. There are computers
Absolutely.
That are not getting into classrooms.
Absolutely. That's one of the first things that I noticed when my son went into the Success Academy and he was put out. It's a very big story. It was made about it in the New York Times by Mike Winrup. But when he went, one of the things that I noticed immediately was when he went into public school from that experience, and I saw how he thrived and excelled and was doing well. And I saw that the teachers were asking parents for chalk. They were asking parents for paper towels. They were asking parents for supplies. Teachers were teaching in the hallway. They were teaching in closets that they were called classrooms. And I was saying, something is seriously wrong with the system. If my child can be put out of a charter school that's going to tax money, and here he goes into a public school, thrives and does well, and these teachers don't even have chalk, basic supplies we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, walk me through the process of how'd you get into, because I've had a couple of state senators come on the program here in Pennsylvania and tell me that, well, you know, you have the choice of schools. The school doesn't choose the kids. The kids get to choose the school, which I think we all by now realize is ridiculous.
Big falsehoods. I bought into that, too, with all of the, as you mentioned earlier, the colorful brochures that my mailbox was inundated with. During the summer, you know, these people would set up tables at every fair, at every place where their children would be and parents would be. And they have these colorful, beautiful million-dollar promotional campaigns. And I bought into it myself. I hadn't had any experience with public school. I have children that have huge gaps between each other. My oldest is 40 years old. And she was in school in the 70s. And so it was a huge gap between her and my son. And, you know, my experience with public school was of the 70s. And when I saw, oh, we have all of these choices now, and these are public schools, and they're set up like private schools, and we have all these students, I bought into it with hook, line, and sinker. And my son's very first day of school, he was held in detention at 5 years old for being unfocused.
What? Whoa, whoa, whoa. A five-year-old unfocused? Color me surprised.
He was unfocused. They said he was unfocused. And if he, they gave me an ultimatum. They said if he didn't straighten out within the next couple of days and get focused and get on task, that I had to look for another school. And the alarms just went off. I said, wait a minute. This is a public school receiving packed tax dollars. You accepted my child. He won a lottery. He got accepted. What do you mean he has to leave?
He won a lottery?
He won a lottery and was presented to him and with Governor Patterson, a big fanfare on TV with all of these reporters. And 2 days later, when he went to the school, they immediately realized that maybe this kid might be a hard kid to teach. They recognized that he had ADHD, which I didn't know at the time. But they recognized it within the first couple of days and immediately preceded their systematic policies that they don't talk about to get him and four others out of there.
To move them out so that they can pick and choose. And what's interesting to me is we see this not just in New York but all across the country, that the schools pick and choose. And what's odd to me is you would think if you had the ability to just to take the cream of the crop that you would have much higher testing scores and that you'd be testing off the charts. The sad reality is that's not even the case.
And $14 million in private money as well.
And that as well. I mean, you would think with all of that, the resource and all of that picking and choosing, that they would have the best of the best and that they would be able to teach them. And my concern is that, you know, it's more about generating revenue than it is about educating children.
Yeah. It's become my passion to fight against because when I think of public education, I think of the epitome of democracy. It's what makes our country so great. It's the great equalizer. I remember taking my son to a speech, and one of the first things, a speech in the campaign of Barack Obama, and the first thing he said to the children in the audience is that without education, I wouldn't be here talking to you today as a candidate for the president of the United States. And, to see this privatization, because that's what it is, this select way of tearing up our basic democracy of public education in this way is just horrible. And I think everyone, every citizen, whether you have a child in school or not, need to be concerned about this.
Yeah, and the other part of this is, you know, going back to that lottery, because, you know, I think most people have seen the scenes from that that propaganda film Waiting for Superman, where you've got these children who didn't get in who are weeping because it's been so built up that if they don't win this lottery, they're not going to get an education, they're not going to get ahead. And what does that say about us as a nation where our hopes are pinned on a lottery?
Yeah, and mind you, this is taxpaying dollars. There's a law that says every child has a constitutional right to a fair education, to an education, a sound education, and this is what we've been reduced to. And we've been duped into believing that this is something that's really good for us when it's absolutely destroying our education. If you go to one of those CEC meetings and see the scenes of the parents fighting against each other, it's insane. It's really bad.
It's really gotten crazy. But let me ask you this, Karen, because, you know, most of the friends that I have, we talk about education in terms of what we got when we were kids. And I think a lot of parents look at what's going on as, you know, it's the same as it was, you know, back in the 70s when your children were going to school. And in that time frame, from the time your first child went to school and now your 11-year-olds, what differences have you seen? Or is it just completely night and day?
Oh, it's a huge difference. You see, parents are called stockholders now. Well, we're the stakeholders now. We're not parents anymore. It's this business model that's fair game. It's something that every politician uses, and it's this political football that has lots of money. People would be amazed if they saw the kind of money that's that these companies, private individuals are coming in, opening up these schools overnight, and disappearing, and it's just causing such a gap in our education and a disparity that's just beyond disbelief. I saw nothing like that in the 70s. If you came to school, like I said, it was the equalizer. It was the epitome of our democracy, public education.
And the sad thing, Karen, is what's going on is we're creating separate education systems, one of private money, one of people who can navigate systems to keep their kids in school or have political power to make sure that they don't get thrown out, and then one where we just warehouse people. Where they don't have any money or resources. And again, this looks like that segregation, and not on race, but on class. Are you able to afford to make donations? Are you able to afford to take days off, to go through processes? That's what's scaring me.
And the thing about it is that it's destabilizing what's left of public education, because what's happening is that with this cherry picking and the way that they do this and this business model that they're using, what's happening is that you're getting this disproportionate number of children of the disadvantaged, the children that need the most resources, disproportionately dumped in these schools. Like the principals there start talking like after the first month of school, the charter schools start getting rid of the kids that they don't want. And you just get this huge numbers of children disproportionately being dumped into individual schools where it's taking special needs, because they get rid of the special needs children first. You might have 60% or 70% of the population of that school with very limited resources that now have to educate and compete with these schools.
And that's the thing we don't hear much about. And the other part that I would like to highlight is, you know, here in Pennsylvania anyway, I don't know how it is in New York, but once those charter schools, those privatized charter schools, kick those kids out and back to the public schools that are still public schools, the money stays with the charter school. That's how it is here in Pennsylvania. So the incentive, I would argue, for charter schools here is to kick as many kids out as possible because you already got paid.
Yes. When I went and looked into my own son's records, to see his transcripts, he was on their rolls, even though he had went into the public school system. They began in August. They boast about having a longer school year. So they began in August, and they do that, I think, strategically so that they can assess immediately, get as many children as they can, knowing that they're not going to keep all of these kids. And these kids are already on their rolls. My son did not show up in the public school rolls until, I think, the following year, even though he had been in public school that September. They had put him out. They started in August. That I fought with them for 4 weeks, and he winded up in public school the end of September. He didn't show up on their budget rolls until the following year.
Now, this is a kindergartner, right?
A kindergartner.
So, I mean, I can't imagine, you know, look, at the end of the day, I remember going to kindergarten when and this is back to the 70s again, as long as you could tie your shoes and not wet yourself, you graduated from kindergarten.
Yes.
What they've done to my kids, you know, is just amazing what they're able to do. But, you know, I look at these are 5-year-olds who they're not supposed to be focused on their academic careers yet. They're supposed to go, oh, look, butterflies and go.
And that's exactly what my son was. And they said he wants to play too much. He's unfocused. He's not ready. You know, he cannot, you know, and they would have this curriculum where every 45 minutes they was doing something else academically. And then they had to earn 5 minutes of playtime at the end of the day. And this is after a 9-hour day, 5-year-olds.
Yeah. I mean, we can't do that. I mean, you can't do that to kids. I don't care what, I mean, I don't care what the end, what you want at the end of it. You cannot do that to 5-year-olds. You're going to burn them out way too young. And I want them, I want kids to be explorers. I want them to explore where things are and discover and all of that stuff. Or do you think that's part of this? We're trying to maybe take that curiosity out of kids and make them just bubble test takers and regurgitators.
I always call it the indoctrination. That's what it feels like. Nothing like what it was when I went to school or my other daughter went to school, where they were encouraged to fail. They were encouraged to explore, and that was a part of the learning process. It's so competitive. It's such a competitive business model now that even the public schools try to keep up with, that it's almost like the whole thing of teaching our children in this nurturing, comprehensive way doesn't even exist anymore. Even the teachers that want to do it can't.
Yeah, I mean,
the system does not allow. We have created a system that doesn't even allow that to happen.
Yeah, I mean, what we've done is we've turned education into factory work. Teachers are just, you know, like assembly line workers. Each kid's supposedly the same, and we're going to pour knowledge into their empty heads, like, you know, little vessels, and stamp them out. And that's not how it works.
Absolutely, absolutely. Instead of the professionals that they are, and I tell the politicians all the time, I really want you to come without any cameras and sit in a typical, you could pick whatever public school you want to and see what goes on in these public schools, and you will see how they're working with the limited resources, the types of things that they have to deal with, child poverty, lots and lots of children with all kinds of learning disabilities. So they take them all, and they love them all, and they teach them all, and with very limited resources, and then to be judged and compared to these factories that they call schools, these charters, is just insane to me.
So let me ask you last line of questioning, because, you know, we've bought into, I think as a society, we've bought into private good, public bad, corporate good, we the people bad. And we've been, I think a lot of people have bought into this choice idea that, you know, if you just had this choice, it's going to make everything better. What do you tell them?
Well, I think that's when you get into the back and forth with the parents and you start pitting against each other. So I think the bigger argument should be, no, whatever you want for your child, I want for my child. So let's make sure we create a system that every single child enter into will get. Let's focus on that, you know, and that's what I say. You know, that's what I say to the politicians. That's what I say to the parents. That's what I say to the teachers. That's what I say to everyone. Yeah, that's great. If you think that's great, that's good. But wouldn't you want that for every child? Aren't we a better society, a better community, a better world if every single child got that?
No, we're not that society anymore, Karen. We're the hooray for me and the heck with everybody else.
I'm a hopeless optimist.
And I want to be optimistic with you, but sadly, the moneyed interest in this country, the hedge fund managers and the billionaires, listen, like the Waltons and the Gates and the Broads.
Let me tell you something, Rick. It's people like you. It only takes one you, one me, and another one me, and another one you. We have a lot of power. And that's where I spend most of my time, letting people know that we have the power. We, the people, still do have the power. And it's people like you and these shows like this, and teachers, people like Bats, and parents like myself, that will continue to speak out about these injustices and speak against them and push back on them, that will eventually get to the place where we need to be. This will never be acceptable to us. And so I appreciate you.
I appreciate you sharing your story with us. And you're right. We have out-procreated them. What we need to now do is we need to now come together, a little solidarity, a little class consciousness.
Absolutely.
And we need to fight back at this. Karen Sproul, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being on your show.
Thanks so much. Great talking with you, Karen Sproul. Parent in New York City. Again, you know, this charter thing, we've been sold this false bill of goods. I think it's time to push back. Quick break, right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show.
I got a picture in my pocket of a lucky one. I'll announce the winner on the radio. With my microphone, I do a super show. I wear a cowboy hat, it is my business hat. I'm on till 1 a.m., I must tell you that. I'm a man with a mission.
The Rick Smith Show, teaching America for the better.